Sometimes I get this weird feeling that my phone knows what I'm about to think. I don't mean what you just did, like, oh, you looked at camping gear, here's a tent ad. What I'm talking about is when it starts feeding you something you didn't even know you wanted yet. Like it's manifesting your buying habits. And frankly, I find that a little creepy. I don't think it's intuition. I think it's behavioral data. And you're not crazy. You're just unfortunately predictable. And the only reason that feels uncomfortable is because you thought you were free. So here's the thing. Modern life, whether you want to admit it or not, is really just a big psychological experiment. Except there's no lab coat or clipboard. Oh, and there's no ethical guidelines either. Just an algorithm that's running billions of A/B tests on your attention span. So every scroll is a stimulus, and every like a variable. And ultimately, every recommended for you is an invisible hand that's pushing your dopamine lever like a scientist bribing a rat. The only difference here is that the rat doesn't believe it's in control, but you do. And that's exactly why it works so well. So I think about this every time I open Instagram or even a news app. These platforms have mastered one main thing. The psychology of just one more post, one more video, one more argument with a stranger who's probably doesn't really exist because he's a bot. And we're living in the age of infinite stimulation and absolute emotional exhaustion. Because of this, we're overstimulated and underfulfilled. And I don't believe that's by accident, because it's the result of the most successful psychological experiment in history. An economy built entirely on the exploitation of human attention. It's not oil or gold, it's attention. The reality now is that attention can be mined infinitely. And the miners don't even have to dig, because you carry the mine in the palm of your hand. There's this true story about B.F. Skinner, the psychologist who basically invented the operant conditioning box, the device that taught rats to push a lever for food pellets. You've probably heard of this somewhere along the line. So Skinner once said that if you want to control behavior, you don't reward it consistently, you reward it randomly. When the rat doesn't know when the pellet's coming, it starts to become obsessed. And it keeps pushing the lever over and over, just in case. That's the same logic behind slot machines and notifications. And your order has shipped. And you might also like, and your crush is typing. I think you get the idea. They're variable reinforcement schedules, and they're the most addictive psychological mechanism ever discovered. These are now the backbone of your digital existence. And you're not weak for falling for this. You're human. And they built the machine around that very fact. Have you ever wondered why you can't focus anymore? And why you can't read a book without reaching for your phone every few minutes like a nicotine reflex? I also get this feeling sometimes that everything feels like it's happening to me, but I can't seem to look away. Kind of like a slow motion train wreck. The thing about psychological experiments is that they're designed to see how much pressure it takes before the subject eventually breaks. And in this one, they're not even watching from behind the glass. They're in the control room, adjusting the variables in real time. Okay. Here's the thing. This experiment didn't start with the internet. It started around a century ago when a guy named Edward Bernays, Sigmund Freud's nephew of all people, realized you could use psychology to sell anything. So he took Freud's theories about unconscious desire, sex, pleasure, power, belonging, and he applied them to marketing. Now, before Bernays came along, advertising was pretty simple. Buy our soap. It cleans you. After Bernays, buy our soap and people will want you. And just like that, the human psyche became a business model. So, Bernays helped popularize smoking among women by branding cigarettes as torches of freedom. And then he made bacon and eggs the American breakfast because he was paid by a meat company. Now, he even helped convince the public that overthrowing the South American government was good for democracy. Why? Well, because a fruit company wanted cheaper bananas. And apparently, people ate it up. Literally. So, when you scroll through your feed and you wonder how we ended up in a world where your grandmother is buying brain supplements off a Facebook ad that looks like a news article, that's not an accident. It's the end result of 100 years of psychological refinement. All right. So marketing evolved into manipulation. And manipulation evolved into behavioral design. Then behavioral design evolved into what is now algorithmic control. Now, at first, companies just wanted your money. Simpler times. Now, they want your money, but they want your mind even more, because that's where the money lives. So it's not really about selling you a product anymore. It's about shaping what kind of person buys the product. You don't have desires anymore. You have curated impulses. The machine predicts what you'll want before you know you even want it. And when it's right, you just call it convenience. When it's wrong, you call it creepy or whatever. But either way, you stay attached to the system. I sometimes wonder if the algorithm knows me better than my therapist. Because it doesn't just know what I click on, it knows when I'm most likely to click. And it knows what time I'm tired or lonely or bored or what have you. It knows when I'm drinking coffee. And it knows I'll click on 10 signs you're an overthinker at 1 a.m. And Henry the existentialist cat at 3:14 a.m. And then, of course, how to escape the matrix at 8:17 a.m. I don't even have to tell it who I am anymore. It just builds a digital voodoo doll out of my behaviors. And then it whispers suggestions into its ear until the real me starts to move. And I call it personalized content. I think the terrifying part is that we signed up for this willingly. We weren't forced to scroll at gunpoint. No one forced us to post or share anything or binge or doom scroll until 2:45 a.m. We went ahead and did it because it felt good. And that's how every great psychological experiment seems to work. You make the subject want to participate. So you don't need chains if you can convince the prisoner that the cell is nice and cozy. There's a study from the 1950s by the psychologist Solomon Asch that always stuck with me. So he had a group of people look at a series of lines and say which ones were the same length. Pretty simple test. But secretly, all the other people in the room were actors, and they all gave the same wrong answer. And by the end of the experiment, most participants went along with the crowd, even though they knew it was wrong. That's the thing about social pressure. You don't even need to be threatened. You just need to feel like you'll be all alone if you don't conform. And we can blame social media for weaponizing that instinct perfectly. We're no longer pressured by people in a lab because now we're pressured by the invisible approval of millions of strangers. And, we've turned public opinion into a nervous system that punishes deviation, and we call this engagement. So here's the paradox. The internet promised individuality and connection and also freedom. But what it delivered was conformity, comparison, and ultimately dependence. We thought we were getting more control over our lives, but in reality, we were just outsourcing our decision making to algorithms trained to keep us hooked. So the experiment was never really about understanding us. It was about controlling the conditions around us just enough to see what makes us twitch. All right, So here's the trick that makes the whole thing work. The illusion of choice. It's basically the cornerstone of every psychological experiment worth its grant funding. You can't get clean data from a subject who knows they're being manipulated, right? So instead, you make them believe they're the ones deciding. Now, this is why casinos let you press the button to, spin the slot machine. You're not actually changing the outcome. You're just providing the illusion of agency. And modern life, well, it's just a slot machine with better user experience. We love to say we have options, endless streaming services and thousands of dating profiles and, of course, billions of products that are constantly being pushed in our faces. But if you look a little closer, it's all really the same script. It's just been slightly rearranged. So Netflix says, what do you want to watch? But what they really mean is, here's what we'll let you choose between. Or Instagram, it's who or what do you want to be? But it really means, pick your aesthetic, and then we'll show you who's doing it better so that, you can feel inferior. Then, of course, we've got Amazon saying, buy whatever the hell you want, whenever the hell you want, just buy. But somehow every search leads back to the same four brands. It's sort of like living in a carnival funhouse with mirrors everywhere, and each one showing a different version of you that still buys something. That's the funhouse from hell, if you ask me. So, ultimately, choice has become the product. They don't sell us things anymore. What they're selling us is the illusion of freedom. And of course, we eat it up because it's comforting to think that we're steering the ship. Even if the wheel isn't actually connected to anything. So, it's gotten to the point where we've mistaken customization for control. And I have to admit, it's brilliant. Really, because the more options you have, the more you're going to blame yourself when you're unhappy. So if there are 1,000 paths and you still feel lost, it's not the map's fault, right? It's yours. You didn't pick the right diet or the right app or morning routine or whatever. As usual, you didn't manifest hard enough. I think that's the genius of the illusion here. They replace control with culpability. Now, you're not being manipulated. Heavens no. You're just not optimizing properly. Shame on you. It's like we're all contestants in a massive experiment called, what happens if you give everyone unlimited access to everything except fulfillment? And wow, imagine your shock when the results are statistically depressing. I mean, is anyone surprised about skyrocketing rates of anxiety, loneliness, depression, burnout, while attention spans and sleep quality, empathy, and connection are all crashing? It's almost as if the control group died off years ago and no one bothered to tell us. So, freedom used to mean something sacred. The ability to live on your own terms, more or less. Even now, it just means being able to pick your poison. And we can't handle silence anymore because silence doesn't produce data. We can't be bored because boredom doesn't generate revenue. They haven't figured out a way to do that yet, apparently. We've been conditioned to fill every empty space with stimulation because stillness is the only moment the experiment loses access to us. That's why modern society treats boredom like failure. Because a bored human is, frankly, unprofitable. And an unprofitable human is dangerous to this system. They might start thinking for themselves again. And that's a big no-no. It's funny. Because people talk about escaping the matrix as if it's something you can just do with a podcast and a cold plunge. But the real matrix isn't virtual. It's actually psychological. And, what it is the invisible framework of incentives and algorithms that shapes your behavior before you even know it's happening. You can't escape what you don't acknowledge. And most people don't want to acknowledge it because it means admitting how much of their personality was manufactured by external stimuli. And that's pretty disturbing. At this point in the game, we're confusing self-expression with brand expression, which means everything from our opinions to our style and our humor are all being filtered through systems that are designed to turn individuality into engagement. And here's the wild part. We volunteer for it. That's right. We just hand over our data, our preferences and insecurities, and we do it with a smile. And we let corporations psychoanalyze us in real time because it makes the ads more relevant. So you could say that we've become collaborators in our own conditioning. We're the rats helping design the maze now. Okay, let's talk about dopamine for a bit. A word that we've all heard plenty of these days. But dopamine is, that's the lab rat's favorite drug. So it's actually more about anticipation than about pleasure. It's like that little surge of something good might happen soon. And every time you hear that little ping or see that red notification bubble, your brain releases a tiny bit or hit of dopamine. And it's not because you got something. It's because you might be getting something. That's what makes it addictive. It's not the reward. It's the chase. And the people who built these systems, they knew that. They studied this stuff extensively and ran all the numbers. Some of the earliest designers at these social media platforms have openly admitted they borrowed from casino psychology. You know, slot machines, intermittent reinforcement, all the dirty tricks that keep people sitting at a blackjack table for 12 hours straight. Only now, the casino table's in your pocket or in your hand. I think one of the most revealing moments in all this came from a former Google ethicist who admitted, "We've moved from a tool-based internet to an addiction-based one." And there it is, folks. The greed just keeps on evolving. This is the quiet tragedy of technological progress. We built these machines that are smart enough to understand us, and then we gave them quarterly profit goals. Because, of course, we did. Imagine putting a neuroscientist in charge of a casino. Yeah. And here we are. Have you ever noticed how every app update somehow makes the app more addictive, but not actually more useful? Well, I have, anyway. So they'll add these stories, reels, filters, animations, all these little bursts of novelty that light up your brain just long enough to keep you from realizing that you haven't actually learned or gained anything. It's like digital fast food, right? Just quick hits of stimulation and zero nutrition. Basically, empty calories. And, of course, the longer you consume it, the more malnourished your mind becomes. Because dopamine is a liar. It tells you that what you're doing is important, but it doesn't really care what you're doing. Think of it as the chemical equivalent of a hype man for your worst habits. So back in 2012, Facebook ran a study, on you. And what they did was tweak the emotional tone of people's news feeds to see if they could influence their moods. And it turns out they could. So they called it emotional contagion. And what they found is that by showing users slightly more negative posts, people started posting more negatively themselves. And the reverse was true as well. But they didn't just measure behavior. They also modified it, which to me looks a lot more like psychological conditioning than social networking. And the kicker is that they didn't even ask permission because, well, you went ahead and clicked accept terms. You know, the internet used to be this place of discovery. It was like this vast frontier where you could stumble into something weird or wonderful and unexpected. I guess those were the good old days. But now it's basically become a behavioral mirror of sorts, reflecting back whatever keeps you engaged the longest. And engagement doesn't mean happiness. It means agitation, outrage, envy, insecurity, and so on. Because those emotions are what drives activity. The system doesn't care how you feel. It only cares that you keep reacting. And that's why every headline sounds like an emergency now. And it's why every comment section feels like a war zone, and every day feels like you're in a psychological treadmill test and the incline keeps going up. We used to joke about Big Brother, but it turns out we didn't really need him. Not applicable. Because we built a billion little brothers instead. And we give them nicknames like Siri and Alexa. And they don't need to watch you from a screen anymore. You carry the screen and you willingly feed it data. I think if Orwell was alive today, he'd probably say, "You idiots, you're not being watched, you're being entertained." And that right there is the genius of the modern experiment. They learned that fear is a weaker motivator than pleasure. And if you control someone through fear, they eventually rebel. But if you control them through comfort, they'll stay forever, ideally. Give them convenience, give them validation, and give them infinite distraction. And they'll never ask who's holding the damn clipboard. So, the truth is, you can't really study people without changing them. Every experiment alters its subject just by observation. And, well, after a couple decades of psychological data collection on billions of human beings, we're starting to see the results. We're more connected and more informed, more stimulated, and yet somehow more lonely, anxious, depressed, and disoriented than ever. It's like humanity's collective psyche has developed side effects from prolonged exposure to artificial meaning. Is anyone surprised with this? The funny thing about experiments is that you're supposed to end them when the results get dangerous. But this one never did because, well, let's just say the test subjects adapted a little too well. We adjusted our behaviors and our expectations and pretty much our entire sense of self to fit inside the cage. And then we started decorating it. We call it aesthetic. It's a faux minimalism, productivity setups, what's on my phone videos. We basically took our behavioral conditioning and made it look beautiful. So we effectively turned the maze into content. And at this point, our attention spans have become like goldfish. Except the goldfish doesn't check X every 3 minutes to make sure it still exists. We can't even watch a movie without looking up the actors mid-scene. as if knowing their net worth or whatever will make the plot somehow more believable. And we've reached the point where we've trained ourselves to crave the illusion of multitasking. But what we're really addicted to is escape. Every few seconds, we jump tracks from app to app, tab to tab, like a lab rat who forgot which lever gives the pellet, but keeps pressing all of them just in case. And that's what we're doing. We're clicking all those levers for hours every day. And unfortunately, our relationships didn't escape the experiment either. Because love, well, it used to mean real intimacy and commitment. And now it's just an algorithmic guessing game based on swiping. We used to fall in love with people in real life. But these days, we're falling in love with whatever fantasy we're conjuring in our minds about someone's profile or online persona. So it's kind of like romance has become a brand exercise. And every relationship begins with market research. And if you're paying attention, it becomes apparent that even our sense of identity is being rewired. Because we used to ask philosophical questions like, who am I? Or is there an I in the first place? And, you know, the fairly standard questions such as, what gives my life meaning? And now it's, what should my personal brand stand for? So what we're doing is curating our online selves with the same precision that scientists design experiments, tweaking and optimizing and so forth, until the digital version of us performs better than the real one. But I think the more we optimize our lives for visibility, the less we're actually living them. So imagine watching yourself through glass and mistaking the reflection for the experience. That's kind of what it's like. And there's something deeply tragic about that, because underneath all the memes and dopamine hits, people are starving for something real. Something that doesn't depend on algorithms or engagement metrics. And the problem is that the longer we stay inside the Petri dish, the harder it is to remember what that even feels like. You can't just delete your accounts and expect sudden enlightenment. It's just not that simple. The experiment, it changed us on a neurological level. It changed what we crave, what we fear, and it ultimately changed what we think we are. We've become a species of overstimulated lab rats that are seeking answers. We're constantly analyzing, self-diagnosing, all while refreshing our notifications to see if anyone noticed. Therefore, we don't even need a scientist anymore, right? The algorithm has automated the experiment at this point. And we're supplying the data willingly, one dopamine hit at a time. So the question isn't, when is it going to end? The question is, what will we be when it does? Because here's the uncomfortable truth. The experiment, unfortunately, isn't failing. It's succeeding. It's teaching us exactly what happens when you expose a social species to endless novelty, comparison, and of course, endless stimulation without any purpose or pause. Because we're learning what happens when comfort replaces meaning and when convenience replaces connection. And we're also finding out what it's doing to us when our attention becomes currency. The results are clear, folks. We didn't evolve for this. We're anxious because we're overstimulated. And we're lonely because, ironically, we're overconnected. I think we're lost because the map keeps redrawing itself faster than we can follow. Maybe that's the real trap of modern life. It's not that we're lazy or distracted or even necessarily addicted. It's that we keep trying to win a game that was never designed to end. You can't win at being a consumer. You can only keep playing. And every new thing you buy or new goal that you hit, it's just another spin of the wheel. The dopamine rush fades, but the debt sure doesn't. Though, I should add, here's the quiet rebellion most people never try. You can stop playing and walk away from the noise. Maybe even let yourself, dare I say, be a little boring. You know, the world keeps telling you that your worth not only depends on your productivity and engagement metrics, but also your appearance, because that's just the superficial reality we live in. But I think the truth is simpler and uglier, though way more liberating. You were already enough before you started trying. You don't have to become someone. You already are. And you don't have to optimize your life. You can actually live it without any of that bullshit. And yeah, it might look a little odd at first, like reading a book that no one's ever heard of, or sitting in silence without checking your phone like a psychopath. Or just, I don't know, just being content without always needing an audience or a platform for it. Maybe peace isn't something you're supposed to find. It's just what's left when you stop looking for it in all the wrong places. So here's a simple suggestion. If modern life is basically a slot machine with arguably better graphics, maybe the best thing to do is just stop pulling the damn lever. Just, you know, let it sit there and flicker and scream for your attention. And then turn around and walk away. Out the door, into the unoptimized, unfiltered, profoundly human mess of being alive. Because that's where life actually happens. somewhere outside of the noise of the almighty algorithm. Somewhere that doesn't need to go viral to mean something. All right. That's all I have for today. As always, thanks for listening.